And with that, let's get on to our current discussion right now on Proposition 1. Again, we have with us Christine Moon speaking in favor and Jennifer McKnight speaking against Proposition 1, the Open Primaries Initiative. And you each get a start with up to 5 minutes if you need that much time to summarize your arguments in favor or opposed and to actually lay out the what the Proposition 1 is. I thought what I would do is actually read the ballot measure as you're going to see it on the ballot. So this is straight from the ballot measure, and it reads, this is a measure to, one, replace voter selection of party nominees with the top four primary, and two, require ranked choice voting for general elections. This measure proposes two distinct changes to elections for most public offices. First, this measure would abolish Idaho's party primaries. Under current law, political parties nominate candidates through primary elections in which party members vote for a candidate to represent the party in the general election. The initiative creates a system where all candidates participate in a top four primary, and voters may vote on all candidates. The top four vote earners for each office would advance to the general election. Candidates would list any affiliation on the ballot, but would not represent political parties and need not be associated with the party they name. Second, the measure would require a ranked choice voting system for the general election. Under current law, voters may select one candidate for each office, and the candidate with the most vote wins. Under the ranked choice voting system, voters rank candidates on the ballot in the order of preference, but need not rank every candidate. The votes are counted in successive rounds, and the candidate receiving the fewest votes in each round is eliminated. A vote for an eliminated candidate would transfer the voter's next highest ranked to the voter's next highest ranked active candidate. The candidate with the most votes in the final round wins. And with that, that's what you're going to see on the ballot as for Proposition 1. And Jen McKnight, go ahead and lead out and tell us why you oppose this.
Hi. So Prop 1 takes our nice little representative government and makes it more of a top-down system. Let me explain how it does that. You know who came up with RCV? Money. People with lots of money. This was money's idea. Money is paying for it. And money will be in control. If you vote for this and don't know exactly where the money came from and why, then it was dark. It was dark money. You just threw your vote in the wind. You don't know where it's going to end up or why. $5 million didn't just come along to do you a favor. $5 million wants something back. $5 million has an agenda. And they didn't tell you what it was. This is happening in like 5 states right now. With way more millions. And all those states aren't saying it's for the veterans. It's not a coincidence. You don't like a two-party system? Don't trade it for a big money system. That's a bad trade. You're trading down. Only people with heavy financial backing will be able to get the name recognition and advertisement to stand out in a 20-person primary. I use 20 as an example. It could be way more. It's unlimited. In a 20-person race for one office, you've got 19 losers, 19 rejects who wasted their savings and months of their time. Just because you don't trust your party to vet. The Pro-Prop 1 people talk about party elites. It's not royalty or Masons or something. The Bonner County Republican Party, the Bonner County Democrat Party, those are just your PCs. It's one person from each of your neighborhoods that you elected, and they don't get paid, and they sit in boring meetings serving you. RCV asks that everybody do the vetting themselves. Do you have time and energy to vet 100 candidates each election cycle, year after year? People don't have that kind of time. I know they don't, because I've been to candidate forums where there's like 30 to 100 people in the audience. Imagine if there were, with all the different races, 100 candidates. Do you know how long it would take to listen to them all? Days. People won't do that. They won't take the time to learn about all those choices. They're just going to have to guess. And that guess will be the result of who bought the most signs, who got their ad on the radio, Who bought TV commercials? You won't have any idea what they stand for because nobody asked, and it won't be marked on the primary. Do we talk about the... So we talked about the fact that top four primary, ranked choice general, eliminates party vetting and puts more power in the hands of big donors. It also kind of gets rid of the problem of vote splitting. When you eliminate vote splitting, you get a flood of candidates. You may have seen ballots getting passed around from places that have RCV showing a lot of candidates. One has 48 for one race. I don't use that as my example. I split the difference and say 20 because it's probably a realistic number that we'll see for the more desirable offices year after year. Prop 1 is making promises to Republicans. It's making promises to Democrats. It's making opposite promises to get votes. But in the end, the power goes to money.
Okay, Jen McKnight, thank you for that. And now, Christine Moon, give us your statement in favor of Proposition 1.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to issue a little bit of a disclaimer. I am a volunteer. And as such, I have not been in the room when the proposition, when the measure was devised. So I might not be able to answer all the questions that might come up about the background of this. So with my disclaimer, I would first like to start out by going over how voting will look from a voter's perspective if Prop 1 is enacted. So for the primary election in May, beginning in 2026, if Prop 1 is enacted, our primary ballots will look different. All the candidates, not just the ones from one political party, or worse, for the unaffiliated, only the few nonpartisan candidates will be on the ballot. And in the primary, we will vote, as always, for our one best person for each office in the primary. We'll have the possibility of voting for the one best person, regardless of their party. Unaffiliateds and independents, like everyone else, will now get a full ballot with all the candidates on it. In the general election in November, it will take for the first time over 50% of the voters to choose the candidate to win. Our general election ballot for each office will have the top four primary election vote getters for each office. Often, one candidate will have earned more than 50% of the vote and will be declared the winner. If not, there will be a runoff to be sure that the elected person has over 50%. But unlike in some states, we won't have to go back to vote in the runoff. It will be a runoff that will be conducted using our already submitted ballots. So when we vote, we will, if we choose, rank order the four candidates according to our preference. This permits an instant runoff, so we don't have to go in and vote again. The county clerk will already have, if we choose, our second, third, and fourth choices to apply. And when no candidate receives more than 50%, the instant runoff process is used. Our preferred candidates beyond our top candidate are entered into the count. The runoff process is applied until one candidate has at least 50% of the vote. As it currently stands without Proposition 1 being enacted, a political candidate in a four-way race can win with only 26% of the vote. And as an example, in the congressional race in Idaho for District 1, there are four candidates. They're Fulcher, Peterson, Losby, and Gomez. And it is possible, for example, that Russ Fulcher could win with 26% of the vote, or Kaylee Peterson could win with 26% of the vote. That means that 74% of the voters didn't choose that candidate and may not be okay at all with them winning. And if that person is actually unpopular, we have to wait until the next election to get them gone. With instant runoffs, we'll know the electeds will have at least 50% of the people okay with them. That person, and this is important, knows that they need to listen to lots of constituents to be elected, not just 26%, but up to 50% and more. They may not be a voter's number one preference, but being a number two or even a number three could get them elected in a runoff, so they'll be appealing to a broader swath of the voters. My path to becoming a fan of open primaries and instant runoff elections is that in 2017, I learned that our legislature had refused opportunities to help working people get medical insurance.
You go ahead and wrap up there.
And I started then, as a volunteer, to try to get an initiative on the ballot. It did get on the ballot. It did get enacted. I also worked for the education initiative. That one got enough signatures to get on the ballot. And when I saw how these initiatives could be effective in helping people, I was really interested in working on this initiative. And I'm very happy to say that it's been incredibly popular, probably more so than the other two.
Okay. Thank you, Christine Moon, for that. We have time for a few questions on this, and I want to just kind of pick out some of the points that I've seen expressed out there, as well as some of the points you guys have made. Jen, I probably would go to you first. One of the arguments I see made most consistently in favor is that with closed primaries, voters who are independents don't really have anything to vote on in the primaries. And we have, I've seen numbers between 250,000 and 270,000 Idahoans are independents, and the closed primary system essentially disenfranchises them, leaves them out of the decision-making. What is your answer to that?
Independents can also choose a side, and I think that this system will disenfranchise everybody. I think it will also continue to disenfranchise independents because it's such a difficult system. So Republicans, Democrats, independents, I think everybody's going to have a really hard time with the top four and the ranked choice with all of the candidates that are going to be on the ballot. I think that a lot of people want like the idea of an open primary, but that's not on the ballot. Open primary isn't on the ballot. Top four is on the ballot. So top four primary and ranked choice voting is what's on the ballot. So I think that people who like open primaries should take a really hard look at it and see if it's what they were hoping it was.
Christine, would you like to address that same question?
I would just like to say that I don't think there's anything more open than allowing everyone to have access to the full slate of candidates. And I've spoken to many people in the course of this last 2 years of talking about this. And the open primary, the notion that everyone can have access to the full slate of candidates, is extremely popular. That is one thing that has really emerged. People like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Christine, to you, a question that Jen has made as well as one that's out there. This system is just going to be complicated for voters to figure out. How do you respond to that, the fact that, you know, a lot of voters aren't really going to have this figured out and will be confused?
I have talked to people from Alaska, for example, where this was used beginning in 2022, and pretty much uniformly they've said that it's not that complicated, that being able to pick your favorite candidate and then your second and then your third and then your fourth is not complicated at all. We basically do it all the time. And many people that I've talked to who have participated have said that this is really pretty easy. And there are opinion polls showing after voting that voters think that this is pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. Jen, we'd like to expound on that question.
I would say that it's not complicated if you're just going to go and guess. If you're just going to go and guess, and I think now we're talking about the general. So at the general, it's the top four. So you're only going to be looking at four people in each race, which is more than we are used to seeing in every race. We don't always see four in every race. But I think the complicated part comes in if you're going to actually try to study how you feel about all of these different candidates. And then the other complicated part comes in after you've made your marks and your votes, and that's knowing where your vote is going to end up. And especially for people who want to go and audit afterwards, it becomes really complicated. So the complicated parts are after the guessing part. Or if you're not going to guess, if you're actually going to do research on all of these candidates, four in each race, and there are several races that you're going to be seeing on your general ballot. So that's a lot of people to learn about. So that's where it becomes really complicated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Christine, to you, one of the points that Jen came out on was that there's been a lot of dark money behind this. That is, people have been contributing to the campaign. Actually, it's coming from, I'd say there's a lot of money that's come into the campaign from both sides on this. But how do you answer the criticism that the people that are for this are getting money from outside the state to get this thing passed?
Well, I'm not informed about all the contributions, except that I do know there are over 2,000 volunteers in the state who have poured hours and hours because they favor this measure, and their contributions need to be considered as well. I also know that, I just know so many people who have given of their own money here in Idaho, who any time that a financial contribution is needed from local people, they contribute. And that includes people who are retired and are giving what little they have to see this pass. It is an enormously popular, I would say, measure. And Idahoans have really stepped up to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jen, do you want to expound on that a bit more?
Yeah. And I'm sure that they do have volunteers, but they also have a lot of hired people. So in a lot of places in the state, the yes side is hiring their door knockers. So they're paying them $20 an hour, which I think is that's a little short. Door knocking is hard. But, you know, you have to really love it. You have to really love the cause to go out there and do it. And the no side definitely has a lot more of the grassroots and a lot more of, you know, just having to do things kind of on the cheap and being good with money. The yes side, there may be a lot of money poured into this from both sides, but the yes side has way more money. They have at least $5 million right now, and more just keeps pouring in and pouring in. And it's not pouring in from Idaho, it's pouring in from outside. So, you know, the huge financial systems that are outside of Idaho are pouring in to change Idaho. And you can tell that it is definitely not something that originated here, because it's happening in like five states right now at the same time.
Okay, thank you. Got time for just a couple more questions before we go to closing statements. Jen, do you first on this one? So one argument I've seen in favor is that it's going to result, should it pass, the ranked choice voting is going to result in candidates that are needing to appeal to a broader spectrum of voters. They're not going to be going just for that first place vote. They realize they need to, if they're not a voter's first choice, if they're the voter's second choice, that could help them win. And in this sense, the proponents make the argument it'd be less polarizing, and we'd get more representative government. Now, what do you say to that?
Well, I think that just getting both sides to not hate you is not going to push anybody through in that crowded of a race. I think that it's really going to be about name recognition. It's really going to be about money. And, you know, when we get our, in the end, when we get our second or third choice in ranked choice voting, they're going to say, you know, you picked that guy. Aren't you happy? It wasn't your first choice. It might not have been your second choice. And they're going to say, you picked them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Same question to you, Christine.
I do think that needing to get over 50% of people to check your box means that you are going to be a more responsive candidate. And I have heard interviews with, again, people in Alaska who have said that they have become better candidates and that they have worked across the aisle and that they are feeling more responsive to all the voters, not just a narrow slice. So I do feel that we will have a better set of elected officials with this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And actually, I don't have time for another question. So we need to go to just a closing statement of a minute or two. And first to you, Christine.
I would say that open primaries reform is enormously popular simply because of openness to vote for the person, not the party. It's open to more people for whom primaries have been closed since the legislature passed a closed primary law in 2011. Open primaries respect people, and they respect the mostly rural character of Idaho where people can still directly know the candidates or know people who directly know their character and their performance. Instant runoff voting in the general is good because it simultaneously provides for more choice and for more accountability by elected officials. Ultimately, it's the Idaho Constitution that says political power is inherent in the people.
Thank you, Christine Moon. And Jennifer McKnight, to you now, closing statement, why people should be opposed.
Yeah, I'd like to remind everybody that open primaries, you're not going to see that on your ballot. And you're also not going to see instant runoff on your ballot. What you're going to see is top four primaries and ranked choice general. And that's what I've been talking about this whole time. So here's how ranked choice voting really works. You're going to get a whole bunch of extra people to enter each race. More choices. For one office. That's messed up. What, do you own a yard sign company? We're going to see a whole, just tons and tons of yard signs out there from now on. You're going to get extra people to run, get their hopes up, get them to waste their money. There's only one job opening. And then you take away the votes they earned. RCV is like a six shooter with four bullets in it. These guys and ladies run. Then you eliminate them one by one and take the votes they get and give them to people higher up to make them look as if they were more popular, to fake extra support. It's like little Johnny got a C- on his paper at school and you turn it into a zero. The people who got heavy financial backing at the top get all the votes. This is a bad idea. It's a mean idea. It's a wasteful idea. Vote no on Prop 1.
Jennifer McKnight and Christine Moon, thank you so much for coming in to rally your side and give these arguments. It's much appreciated.